Okay, good evening, gentlemen. We're continuing in the Rambam, Perek Hey, Hilchas Genev, Aloha Beis, page 192, 193 in the Masnayim text. We just jumped into this new Perek last night, and we'll just review some concepts. Number one is forbidden to buy any stolen goods from a ganav. Okay, the reason you're not allowed to do that is because it just encourages more of that. It's putting a stumbling block before the blind. He will steal from other people. And it, without people to sell to, he wouldn't steal. So therefore, you're not allowed to do this, and it's a very difficult aver to do tshuva for. That's point number one. Now, point number two, as we mentioned yesterday, there's a concept called takonas hashuk, a decree by the rabbis in order to ensure that proper commerce can go on in the marketplace. As we will see, and instead of giving you the introduction again, we'll just go into the halacha, and then we'll explain it out of the halacha. So on halacha beis, the bottom line. Hagoynef umachar. A guy steals, and now he sells it to somebody. V'lo nis yashua balim. And the owner, the original owner, did not give up hope. So under that circumstance, according biblically, has there been a sale transacted? No. The sale has not been transacted. Because it belongs to the original owner. The only way that that object can go out of the owner's domain, so to speak, his possession, is that something very material has to happen to that object. Either the ganav made a change in it or something or other, but just the sale, he had no right to sell it. And if the sale is null and void, doesn't happen. Okay, very good. So now, that's where we're up to. Then we find the ganav. Ubo Adim and witnesses come along, Shazah Hachef et Shemachara Ploni who Gnobef Neno, that this object, that this Ganav sold to the third party, they are witnesses that say, we know you stole it, and this is one you sold, and we caught you. So now the question is as following. This unsuspecting buyer bought goods from a Ganav. So what are we saying? We're saying that the original object has to go back to the owner. Very good. But the buyer spent $100 to the ganav. So the question is, what are we going to do now? Okay, that's the question. How are we going to deal with the buyer for that $100? So, technically, the sale was no sale, and we should tell the buyer, you're tough luck. You had no right to sell it, and you're out of business. And now you want money, go to the ganav and get money from the ganav. Try your luck with him. However, the rabbi stepped in, and now comes the takana sashuk. The decree that enables commerce to continue. And we say like this, the item gets returned to the owner. However, this is where the rabbis step in. And the original owner, the original owner, he is the one who gives money to the buyer. So the buyer is guaranteed no loss. And this is done, why? This is done as a decree to keep the marketplace going. Because if a person goes and buys, if we would not have this decree, people would never buy anything. Because if he knows, if I buy from somebody, a nice, honest-looking fellow, and then we find it's a ganav, I'm going to be out of pocket. I'm going to have to go after the ganav. It's not like I'm going to get the money back or it's going to be difficult. People aren't going to bother to ever buy anything. So therefore, to make it easy, we say the item has to go back. That's the halacha. But now we're looking in terms of payment. So in terms of payment, the original owner has to pay him. Now you're going to ask, what if the original owner doesn't have the money to pay him? So what's going to be the answer to that? It's going to be a debt. Well, that's not going to make the guy very happy. Right? What? Well, yeah, then he could just give him the item back if he wanted to, or wait till he collects from the ganav. But there is an onus on the owner to be able to make things better for the buyer. That's the point over here. So the buyer, at least, is a little bit more at ease. It's more likely that an honest owner will pay him the money quicker than the ganav. Okay. And now, what about the owner now? The original owner now, who's now paying to the buyer. What about the fact, so now he's given money, and so what's going on? So, and the original owner goes and deals with the ganav, who stole from him. And that's the way it normally would have happened. Let's say that the ganav didn't sell it. He would go after the ganav. What if the ganav destroyed the object that he sold? We'd have to go after the ganav. So that's the regular Hilchas Geneva, the laws of Geneva that exist. So that's what we're saying. Irrespective of the fact that the ganav now sold it, we still cannot have the buyers suffer from that, or we'll have no commerce going on. And therefore, we say the original owner has to pay. The object goes back to the original owner. He pays the buyer. And now the original owner has to go to the ganav and deal with the ganav. This is all of what the original owner did not give up hope of getting it. Now, that's one thing. There's another aspect. This was assuming that the buyer was unaware that the person who sold it to him was a ganav. However, as we continue, Vim ganav mefursamu, it was a famous ganav. It was a guy people know this guy. He's been caught many times. He's not an honest fellow. Or whatever. Circumstances are obvious when he opens up his coat and there's 20 Rolexes over here. Whatever it is, there's ways to know that the guy's a ganav. It's very likely the guy's a ganav. There's a history of it. So if that's the case, now let's think about it. Why are you buying from this guy? Like we've said earlier, you're not supposed to support your local ganav and keep him going. So now that you have bought from someone that is least suspicious, right? So now you are assuming the risks that are involved when you do that. Therefore, vim ganav mafursamu, if it's a well-known ganav, so in that situation, lo asubo takona sushuk. We did not make the decree of the marketplace that the original owner has to pay back the buyer. No. Veina ba'olim nosin lakeach klum. The original owner doesn't give any money to the buyer. So what happens? So the object goes back to the owner because there was no yish yet. He didn't give up hope. So the sale was not a valid sale at all. The buyer has to now do a judgment of the ganav. He tries to get money from the ganav. It serves him right. You buy from a ganav. So now if the owner finds out what's going on, it's got to go back to the owner. And now you have to loot the ganav. So no takanas are shook under that situation because the guy doesn't deserve to get such a break. This is all if the original owner was not Mi'ai, should not give up hope. Now let's look at the other side. What happens if the original owner did give up hope? So what have we learned already? If an original owner gives up hope, the sale's a sale. Why? Because now we say, Yiyush, when you give up hope, let's say by a lost object. Why are you allowed to keep a lost object? Because once the owner gives up hope, and now I just find an object, I didn't do anything wrong, and the object's coming to me in a permissible way, he's given up hope, I'm allowed to keep it. As opposed to when a ganav just takes it, so the guy gives up hope, it's still no reason for the ganav to keep it because it came into the ganav's hands in an illegal way. But now when the ganav sells it to somebody, and it's an unsuspecting customer, so that unsuspecting customer, the item is coming legally in his hand. He doesn't know anything's wrong. And there's yish, there's giving up, and giving up with the thing legally coming into his hand. The guy's entitled to keep it. So in that case, the buyer acquires it, it's a valid sale. The question now becomes, so now what's going to happen with the money that the original owner is out of pocket? So let's continue in Halacha Gimel. Nisyashua ba'alim min ha-ganeva. The original owner gave up hope of finding the lost object. Now it doesn't make a difference. Bench nisyashu v'achach machar ganach. Bench nisyashu achash machar. It doesn't matter if he gave up hope and then it was sold, or it was sold and then he gave up. Ram doesn't make a difference at least. What's the halacha? Kona halokeach b'yeish. The buyer acquires it with that despair of that giving up hope, and with the shini rishus, changing of possession, and therefore vein machzer agneva asulah. He does not have to return the lost object to the owner. Now this is have nothing to do with takana sashuk. It has nothing to do with a rabbinic decree at all. This is the halacha. This is the biblical law. It came to him with his legally. So there's no problem with that. That's halacha. So what? Elanois and Lahem. However, they throws in. But what if the guy you bought it from was a recognized ganav? It was a recognized ganav, and the original owner gave up hope. So if that's the case, so Elanois and Lahem, he has to give the money. In other words, he keeps the object. The object was a legal sale. You can't forget that. We can't move the object because it was with the yush, it was a legal sale. So it's a legal sale. So what happens? Well, now since you knew you were buying from a ganav, so now who's the one who has to give the money? So it's the buyer who has to give the money. And Ela Naisam Adam, he gives the money. Im lakach mi ganav mefursam. If he took it from a well-known ganav, because that becomes a penalty to the buyer. Since you bought it from a well-known thief, and now you know if the owner was miyayish, gave up hope, you will acquire it. You will own it. And if the owner's gonna wanna come, he's gonna wanna get money for that, So you don't have to give him back the item, but what? You give him back the money. And now you want to get money? So now go to the ganef and try to get money from the ganef. Right? Oh, ein anasan klal, lo chayfetz v'lo damim, mipnei takana shuk, or he doesn't have to give him anything because of the decree of the shuk, im lo hayezah moicher ganef muslim, if it wasn't a well-known ganef. If it wasn't a well-known ganef, you don't have to give him anything. The question is, like, why do you really have to call it a takana shuk? Well, we could say like this. The fact that, he does own it. That, you don't, there's no takana shuk, he does own it. The question is, maybe we still say he has to pay back money. So the takana shuk still comes into play in this situation, that he doesn't have to do anything, and the original owner now has to deal with the ganef. So we still apply that takana shuk if you don't know it was a ganef that did that. Alright, that's all pretty straightforward, it's pretty clear now. Okay, halacha dalet. Now we come to an interesting thing here. Bisman, and I was continuing with this theme the whole way through. Bisman shalokech osa dinim balabais. Okay, so now let's say that the buyer now is making a cheshim with the balabais. Okay, we're speaking in a case where the balabais has to, he's going to give the item back, and the balabais has to give him money, right? Let's say the first case, where the owner wasn't miyayish, so what do we say? The buyer gives the item back to the owner, and now the owner has to give him money. Question is, how much money does he give him? So now, what do we say? Well, the buyer says, I paid the guy of $200 for it. A guy, maybe it was, and my owner might say, well, I think only it's worth $100, whatever. No, whatever. So in other words, how are we going to determine how much money was sold? Because when you're buying and selling things, it determines what the price is. A guy asked for such money, you gave him the money. So im ein eden bekam alokach, if there's no witnesses as to what the sale was for, if there's witnesses and see $100 changed hands, they know what it was sold for. If it's not sold for, so now how are we going to determine this? Certainly the owner doesn't know what it's worth at the time of the sale. They know what the sale. So what do we say? Hariatagar nishba benikitas chefetz bekam alokach. The buyer swears with what we call a nikitas chefetz. This is a little bit of a stronger oath. Where it's a rabbinic oath, but yet stronger, that you have to hold on to an object while you make the oath. A holy object, like a Sefer Torah, or something like that, tefillin, whatever. You hold on something holy, and you make an oath. What do you say? How much I spent when I bought it? V'noytel min ha-ba'olim, and he's able to collect the money from the owner, and then the owner's gonna have to go to the ganef and take what he wants. Why? Because since the purchaser, he's the one who is holding on to the article, and he's the one who has to give it back, and we're making this whole takonas hashuk, so the people won't be afraid to buy things. So if he bought it and paid X amount of dollars, so he has to say what it's cost. Now obviously there's a temptation to maybe lie, right? Oh, what a great situation. The guy's gotta pay me for it. I'll say whatever I want. That's why the rabbis say you gotta swear by holding a Sefer Torah. Cause you're an honest guy. You're just a guy who bought something. So now you say it was so much. So let's just try to curb the possibility of you wanting to possibly pad the price a little bit. So by you swearing to God, by holding on to a Sefer Torah, we would assume that most Jews are God-fearing enough for a few bucks. They're not going to swear and say God's name in vain just to make a few bucks on that. And the owner has nothing, there's nothing the owner can do because he has no way of knowing what it was sold for. And that the whole decree is that the buyer should never lose. So whatever he paid, that has to be paid for, but he has to swear. Let me just finish this point. And this is a rabbinic oath. Anyone who swears and takes, as opposed to biblical oaths, when you look in the Torah, biblical oaths are only done to not have to pay. Usually, in the Bible scenarios, a guy says, I think you stole from me, you're a shomer, a witness, you know, you're saying it got stolen, I think you stole it. What do you have to do? They have to swear. Usually swearing is done to not have to pay. That's the general way how swearing happens in the Torah in financial issues. Here is an unusual case. You're swearing to get money. So that becomes a rabbinic type of an oath. The rabbi said we want the guy to swear so he won't cheat the original owner, and therefore that's called a shvua with nikitas chefetz. And that's what he says. Nishba v'noitel, anyone who swears and takes, shvuasa midivarem, it's a rabbinic oath. V'nishba v'nikitas chefetz, he swears by holding on to an object, kamoshis bar b'mkomo, as is explained in the laws of oaths. Yeah.
I'm wondering whether the owner has a choice to say to the purchaser, keep the item, I don't want to pay you.
That's true. That's coming up, and I believe that's going to be the next halacha we're going to talk about over here. The owner always has the option, if it's way too expensive, he can say, I'm just not interested in taking the item. And that, we have it somewhere. I know we got it somewhere coming up. What?
Assuming there's a profit margin in the item, it's always better for him to just leave him with the item because that's his cost. Although when the thief sold it, he probably sold it at a much reduced price.
It could be a reduced.
Yeah, the thief would probably sell it at a reduced price.
And that's all this guy's going to get.
So he's going to talk about it. So we're going to see. So let's look at the halacha hey. Bisman, okay, so let's go to hey, let's take it a step further now. So what happens now? This is all when the owner and the buyer are dealing with each other. So the buyer is the one who makes the oath and he gets the money. Now let's deal with the buyer and the ganef. Let's say it's a situation where he bought it from a ganef mufursim, right? A well-known ganef. So now he has to deal with the ganef. So now what's going to be the situation here? The guy's going to tell the ganef, I bought it for X amount. You know what the ganef's going to say? You know, you bought it for less, right? So now, hey, bisman shalokech oisedim aganef. Now the buyer, let's say he has to deal with the ganef. He had to give the item back to the owner. So now he has to, because he bought it from a well-known ganef. So now, v'hu omer, so the guy says, b'kaf l'kach l'kachti mimcha. I bought it from you from X amount of money. V'hu omer lo mocharti l'cha elo b'vachaz. I sold you for less. What are you talking about? I sold for you less. Okay, so now what do we do here? So obviously, who cannot swear? The ganef can't swear because we know for sure he's a crook. He stole. I mean, that's clearly a crook, right? The other guy isn't as bad. He didn't really steal. He just bought it. Well, you should not have bought it from. Okay, but that's not the same thing as stealing. I mean, what makes you dishonest for oaths is clearly stealing is a terrible thing. This, as we've said, it's not allowed to, but it's not as drastically bad as stealing. So therefore, hatagar nishba v'nikitas chefetz, the buyer makes an oath for what it's worth and holds on to an object, v'notol menagam, he takes the money from the ganav. Why? She'en ganav yochel ishov, because the ganav is not able to swear, because we don't assume that he's telling the truth. Now, normally, what would be the biblical case be in such a case? If we didn't have this thing fitting into place, what would normally be? The guy claims money from the ganef. The ganef says, I owe you, but not as much as you say. That's what the case. The guy says, okay, now you got to pay me because you sold me, right? Yeah, I did sell it to you. And you owe me money for it. Yes, I owe you money. You owe me $100. No, not $100, just $50. So in the biblical terminology, that's modav amitzas. That's if you partially admit, then there's a halacha you have to swear. As you say, I agree, but only half. You swear and you only pay half. So that would typically be the case over here. The ganef would just say, I agree, but instead of 100, I only say it's 50. And really, how can he take more than that 50? But that's only if the ganef could swear. But since the ganef can't swear, so now he can't refute what the guy says, and the guy gets the 100. But the guy could be tempted to lie by saying the 100. So now we make the buyer make the oath to make sure that he doesn't swear. That doesn't lie and cheat the ganef. So he's also a little bit worried about the ganef. Okay, let's do one more halacha. And now we're going to say, modify when this takonas hashuk, when this decree of the marketplace comes into place or not. So the general rule of thumb that will apply as we go through these halachas is the following. There's only a takonas hashuk, the decree of commerce, when there is an out-of-pocket expense to the buyer. The buyer has taken money and bought the object. And if we're not going to allow to have some kind of correction afterwards, people are not going to buy things, and therefore people aren't going to be able to sell things. And then people don't sell, it's not good for the economy. However, what if it's a case where the stolen item is used not in terms of buying, but in terms of something where there's no out-of-pocket expense? What could that case be? That's halacha vav. Ganav upara b'chovo. Let's say you got like this. A ganav steals steals an object worth $100. Now he goes to a creditor of his and says, I owe you $100. Here, take this instead. Are you happy you have this? It steals a little diamond, some jewelry. I owe you $100. Here's, and he hasn't paid him for months, right, obviously. He says, here's a nice diamond. It's worth $100. You want to take it? The guy goes, yeah. Okay, I'll take it. Okay? Or gun of a parba kefo. Or let's say somebody bought merchandise and he's on credit. And he doesn't have the money to pay the credit, so he pays it off with a stolen object that he gave. Okay, so now what happens? Witnesses come, we find the ganef, and we see that he gave it to the guy as a payment. Now the halacha is, so what do we do with this object? He wasn't allowed to use it as a payment, So would we apply the takanas hashuk or not? Would we apply this decree for commerce or not? What do you think?
The object still has to go back for sure, right?
The object has to go back to the owner, that's for sure. But will we allow the person who received the payment of the debt to get his money from the original owner, or does he have to go to the god? So the answer is, we will not employ the takanas hashuk. Why? Because this isn't something that would hold back commerce. He already lent the money or sold them, whatever. This was only a question of collection. So we don't employ the takanas hashuk, the decree for market sales, if it's only to enhance collection. Collection is always a risk. If you want to sell someone something and you don't take the money up front, you know, that's your problem, man. You're willing to sell the goods even without getting the money. So now a ganefwet gives you something. What are you going to say? Well, without this takana, I wouldn't have taken it. What do you mean? You didn't pay for it. So guess what? He wants to pay back with this. It's not a good payment. Finish. What if the guy writes you a check and there's no money in the bank behind it? What are you going to do? You're going to go to the bank and ask for the money anyway and then tell the bank to go after the guy? That's not how you do that. The guy didn't give you legal tender. So the thing over here, when the guy stole, I mean, he didn't give you anything as a payment. Okay, so you don't get a payment. But you're no worse off had you not taken it from him. In the case of buying, you are worse off. If I wouldn't have paid, I'd have the $100 in my pocket. When I buy something, I gave $100, and I'm losing $100 if you don't make a decree. Here it's a question, I just want to get my money back. So you want to get your money? That was a problem when you made the original sale. Why'd you sell it to him for it? And he'll pay you on credit. So now you have a problem. We're not responsible to deal with the problems that you have. The guy stole, he stole. You took it, you took it. You know what? He wasn't entitled to give it to you. You didn't lose any money more than had you not taken it. So therefore we don't employ the takana. And that's what he's going to say. Again, ganav upar b'chava, ganav upar b'hekefa. A ganav steals and he pays a debt or he pays what he owes of merchandise. Ein bazeh takana sashuk. We do not make this decree of the market. Ella, what do we say? The owner takes back the stolen object and he doesn't pay for it at all. And the debt remains as it was. And that's it. Nothing has happened, better or worse. So we don't make the owner have to have any problems with that. However, what if this? Mishkein hagneva. Let's say like this. The ganav comes and wants a loan. Guy says, okay, you want a loan? I need some collateral. He says, no problem. I'll be back in a day. Comes back in a day, steals a diamond ring. He says, here, I have a diamond from my home. Take the diamond ring. Now lend me $100. Then we find out the ganav's the ganav. Would this be a case where we would employ the takanas hashuk, the market decree, or not? What do you say?
Yeah.
Yes, why?
Because he didn't have legal ownership of the collateral.
He didn't.
He provided for security for the loan.
Okay, but why are we more concerned about the buyer here? He's not really a buyer. But what's the bottom line to make the takana? Is there out-of-pocket expense? The guy would not have, guy lent him the $100 on the assumption that the collateral was proper collateral.
That ring was right? Part of that transaction.
That's right, it's part of that, not a previous transaction. The case before, the guy borrowed the money, you lent the money. Finish, you lent the money. So you didn't ask for any money. That's your problem. The guy gives you something stolen. You didn't invest anything in that last act. When you buy something from a ganav, first case, you've spent $100 on it. You want to make sure what you buy you can keep. So now when I lend you $100, and why am I lending it on the basis that what you have proper collateral, so if we're not going to accept, if we're going to make a takana, what's going to happen? People will never lend people money on collateral anymore. And that's also an important thing for business, right? So the point is always, if somebody is giving money over with this in exchange or as a collateral for the stolen object, then we come to the defense of the buyer or the lender. If the lender or buyer hasn't expended any money, then we say, too bad, you're out of luck over here. So that's what he says. Mishkan Ageneva, the guy took a collateral from something that he stole. Now it doesn't matter. Bein shemishkena b'yas ultimate. It doesn't matter if the collateral is more than what the loan was for, or was less than what the loan was for. It doesn't matter the price. Haba'olim naisin l'bala mashkin. The owner has to, the buyer has to give the mashkin back to the owner, right? Or rather, Begah, Habam Nosdim. See, there's a word missing here. Habam, the original Nosdim, you should have the word Mamun Labala Mashkin. Should give money to the guy who took the collateral. And now the owner has to make a deal with the guy. In other words, you give the collateral back, and the guy who it was stolen from has to give money to the guy who lent the money for the collateral. And now the guy who it was stolen from has to go to the ganav and ask for the money back. Right? That's the same case as if it was stolen and the guy bought it.
Yeah, the problem I have is, what if the collateral is worth more than the loan? Then the lender is going to get more from the owner than he lent to the ganav.
He only gives him the money that he gives him the ganav, but he only gives him the money that he lent him. That's all. Not the $150.
Well, not the value.
Just the money they lent.
Not the value.
He lent them $100. Let's say it was a $200 diamond for a $100 loan. So he gives them back the diamond back. He gives them $100 back.
Okay, okay.
He'll have to make an oath.
Not the value of the diamond.
No, no, not the value of the diamond. So that's all. So again, that's a classic case where we want to ensure that the lender's okay. Now, what's going to be an exception to that rule, though? That's all if the guy wasn't a well-known ganav, right? Elim kein hoy, but Elim kein hoy ganav mafuris the gushmar. But when you gave a collateral loan to a guy who's a ganav, now that's your problem. You could assume that when the guy gave you a collateral, it was a stolen thing, and therefore you're going to have to give the item back, and you're going to have to go to the ganav and get the money.
So from something from the ganav as lending.
As lending on collateral from him, because you should never assume the collateral is his. Okay, go ahead.